following program is brought to you in living color on NBC.
They'll know you've arrived when you drive up in the 1958 Edsel, the car that's truly new from nameplate to taillights.
Connie!
Hi, Mr. Wilson.
Oh, hello, Dennis.
And now your host, Walt Disney.
Welcome to that tip-top terrific and splendidly prolific waltz down memory lane, the Mid-Modcast. And here are your Mid-Modcasters, Craig, Paula, and Dave.
Welcome to the Mid-Modcast, where we make all your mid-century dreams come true. That's my new thing, making your mid-century dreams come true. I'm Craig. Who are you people?
I am Paula, and it's a tip-top terrific and splendidly prolific waltz down memory lane.
It is. It is.
Alrighty. And nicely done. This is Dave.
And we have with us Mark Hooper, bartender extraordinaire. Bartender
Aloha.
To the stars. To the stars.
Oh, I want to know about this.
Well, we're stars now.
Oh. So
Hey, we've got our website up and running. Check that out, midmodcast.com. Find us on Facebook, on the Twitterverse, all sorts of different places. Subscribe to this podcast. By all means, please subscribe.
Like
you
us.
You make me happy. I need to be loved today.
Do you need a good review?
I need a good review.
Please.
Really, listen to this.
Oh, yeah.
Man, that's good stuff. Oh, yeah. Love it. So today we're talking about all things tiki. Let's talk tiki, and especially tiki history. You know, this is something that we are all passionate about here on the Mid-Modcast. It's tiki stuff in general. This, for me, has been a big part of my interest in mid-century things in general, is the tiki world kind of brought me back around to my roots in the 1960s and whatnot. So this is huge for me and for Paula. We've been to various tiki confabs, the Hukilau and
the
tiki oasis. And I know, Dave, you've been to a few also yourself, right? What have you been to?
Well, I have been to one that Mark will be very familiar with, Aloha by the Lake at Lake Ooh. George, Ohana.
New York.
And I... Yeah, and I
Luau by the lake.
Sorry, and then I've been to Tiki Con in Portland, Oregon.
Yeah, there's one. That
two again, two to two. We're tied.
Yeah.
Didn't you also attend Tiki Cat in Chicago?
Oh, yes, I did. The very first year, 2012.
Wait,
I think.
There's one in Chicago?
Yeah, there's a crawl, right? It's kind of a crawl.
Yeah, it's called Tiki Cat, and it's fantastic, and it's a. It's sponsored by the Fraternal Order of Moai. Everyone arrives on Friday evening at the Aloft Hotel by the O'Hare Chicago Airport.
Yes.
And we have a nice reception that night. Usually a band plays a cocktail. Slippers played 1 year. Cocktail Preachers, I'm sorry. Played 1 year. Slippers. What in the world?
I like that name, though. Cocktail Preachers.
Isn't that great? And then on Saturday, we board buses. We leave our keys in our hotel rooms, and we drive across Chicago, the greater Chicago area, to different tiki bars or Chinese restaurants with tiki drink menus, and we have a spectacular day, and we all wind up very much rum tired at the end of a Saturday.
Yes.
The bus is very quiet on the drive back.
Everyone's asleep. That's where all the best tiki bars are.
I'm going to apologize ahead of time for my wife today because I'm sipping on my Dark and Stormy. I've got about 3/4 of it left and hers is drained. So this could get wild. This could be a bumpy ride.
I wanted to finish it before we started so I would make noise.
She is the type of patron you like to see in a tiki bar.
Yeah, I'm one of those slow sippers, but anyway.
So, Mark, do you remember that very first year, the big letdown for everybody? I mean, it was a great event, but right as you guys were in the final planning stages of putting that all together, Trader Vic's like closed up shop.
Yeah, that wasn't the beginning of the end, but it was the Dallas Trader Vic's had closed. And I don't know if you remember the drama behind that on Tiki Central, but that was just a mess. And shortly thereafter, Trader Vic's in Chicago, which was a true Tiki Palace, closed down. And yeah, that was heartbreaking. And what's really regrettable and almost embarrassing for me to say, my wife and I stayed at the Palmer Hilton, and we didn't know that Trader Vic's was still open down in the basement. Missed it. I missed Trader Vic's in Chicago completely.
Oh, man.
Never. Oh.
We managed to get to the Los Angeles one before they closed. So that was nice. Yeah. But yeah.
Is that the LA Live location?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. We were going to see Don Tiki that night.
So we
went and saw Don Tiki and had
first we went to Trader Vic's. Then we went to Don Tiki at the Disney Concert Hall.
Yeah,
that's fantastic.
It was a beautiful evening. Awesome.
Yes. It was their Christmas concert.
I highly recommend you guys go to Atlanta and go to that Trader Vic's.
Okay.
The drinks are questionable. The staff is up and down on the consistency of the quality of the drinks. Sometimes they are fantastic. But you just need to see that beautiful palace that's just like an old 1960s Trader Vic's.
Oh.
So yeah. As we're going to be talking more and more about the history of Tiki and that sort of thing, I have to ask you guys, and just go one at a time, what is your favorite, what should I say, vintage Tiki establishment that's still open?
Vintage.
So like a old school one.
The Alibi in Portland, Oregon, which opened in 1947.
Wow. Still going.
Yeah, it's been off and on, and it kind of lost its identity with Tiki, but these new guys have re-embraced the whole Tiki. It's got one of the coolest signs that you'll ever see outside of a Tiki bar. It's just really old school neon. And it's just got all the kitsch. It's kind of a Tiki dive bar. Friends of mine and I, when I was doing a podcast with Ray Wyland, Tiki with Ray, we got on this whole discussion of our favorite Tiki dive bars versus the Tiki Palace. And Alibi is my favorite Tiki dive bar.
Better than Frankie's in Las Vegas. Have you been to Frankie's?
I have not been to Frankie's. Oh. I've been to Vegas, but I'm good friends with Jason Smith, and he, who does a lot of the eBay seminars and webcasts.
Oh,
and he and his wife want us to come to Vegas, and once this whole COVID thing passes,
Now, definitely. For our listeners who aren't familiar with the whole Tiki scene, what really constitutes a Tiki bar as opposed to here you go to Put In Bay and then you go, it's a Tiki bar. I mean,
yeah, they've
it's
got
not,
some bamboo on the walls, therefore it's a Tiki
it's
bar.
It's a Tiki bar in Put In Bay. But what really, for our listeners who want to know the scoop, what constitutes a Tiki bar?
The key word is escapism, Paula. It is like, and you guys will identify with this, it is like getting onto an attraction at Disneyland. you can be in Des Moines, Iowa on the outside, but when you walk inside, you're not sure where you are. But it takes you away from the cold of Des Moines, Iowa in February or, the cold of Chicago. You walk into the Makahiki and it's all of this beautiful, not Makahiki,
Halakahiki.
Thank you.
I always have.
Thank you.
I have a hard time with that one too.
Which the Makahiki is an event in Indianapolis, and shout out to my Indianapolis Puka Puka Farm brothers. But the Halakahiki is festooned with all this Witco, and it, I was actually inside the Halakahiki one year for Cat, David, and it was snowing buckets outside.
No, my goodness.
And inside, we were in this tropical oasis, and we were all just kind of joyously focusing on that we were inside on this like little tropical island with the snow outside. It was fantastic. It was so much fun.
My favorite for that is Foundation in Milwaukee. I took some friends there. I was there for our church bodies conference one year. And it was cold out, and you pull up, and your friends get out of the car, and you're looking over your shoulder because the neighborhood looks a little dicey. You're like, I'm going to get stabbed, And the next thing you know, you open the door of this crappy old white house, Mm-hmm. And you're in a tropical paradise. And it's, mm-hmm. what happened here? This is amazing. You
drinks
know,
but, are and the drinks so are, good.
Yeah.
Oh, even the Maikai, you're in Fort Lauderdale, which is pretty cool, you know, just being in Fort Lauderdale. But you step into the Maikai and you step out of Fort Lauderdale. You're yeah. in another location. And then three dots and a dash.
Oh, yeah.
And you,
oh, yeah.
you go down those stairs festooned with all those glowing skulls.
That's and Chicago.
It's Chicago, and it's that one really is very much like a Disney attraction. It yeah. really, you feel like giving somebody an e-ticket as you come down those stairs because it's just so glorious. It's just so much fun.
Yes.
Well, let's
get... Craig, don't forget the time we were at Tiki Cat in Kansas City oh. and it was pouring buckets. I mean, it's like every time I go to that place, there was some weather event going on. But, you know, then you walk through that door into Tiki Cat, and it's like... Exactly what you said, Mark. You get to escape from the rest of the world. So, yeah. Paula, to go back to your question, you know, it's got to be dark.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, think about when we went to Max's South Sea Hideaway back in August or July. Mm-hmm. It was so dark in there. And, you know, there's this exotic escapist music playing. And
right. It's got to be that music.
And somebody
too.
Sets a beautiful drink in front of you and it's like, yeah. Perfect. So
yeah. It really does take you to another place, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. That's something that we're working on with our basement bar too, is kind of, you know, I sit down there and I look around and I am not a handy person. And I look around and I say, I can't believe I did this. This is amazing.
it looks great.
It's, it serves two purposes. I was about to say it's something that you can't experience without your group of friends, but that's not true. Mm-hmm. I was on my way to Cleveland. I was Akron, actually. I was doing an event for Tiki Underground, and I stopped in Columbus, and I paid one last visit to the Grass Skirt, which has since closed.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But I was there by myself, but that was a farm hangout, the Fraternal Order of Moai, and the Fraternal Order of Moai started in Columbus, Ohio. I was there by myself, and of course there's this whole fraternal connection to it, but it was a very reflective and spiritual kind of moment for me to just be in there sipping a Mai Tai by myself. And it didn't last long because the bartending staff there was so friendly. They were in my business and, you know, but for a while there, I was just relaxed and just very contemplative. It was great. I enjoyed it.
By the way, our friends Jesse and Sean love you to death, Mark, and I'm sure that they would love to send their regards to you.
I love them to death. Tiki Underground is fantastic.
Yeah, it's one of our favorite spots up here.
We see the Fromm people here.
And that's another one of my – I consider Tiki Underground as a Tiki dive bar, and I they love that. And it's another one of my favorite Tiki dive bars.
Oh, thanks. You
just go in there – you don't have to dress up if you don't want to. You can just go and slum, and they are so happy. They're so happy to have you.
Yep.
And I look forward to being back there and slinging. I'm real happy that Tim Hardnett is back on staff there.
Yep. Yep.
It's a creepy place.
It's amazing because it's a place with community. It's just got a lot of community sense to it. A lot of activities going on there. It's fantastic. Hey, let's get into the history of it all, Mark. Where does it begin? Where did this whole tiki thing come from?
Even before tiki, there were tropical bars. Oh. And, you know, you think about all of the big nightclubs that were the scene in the 20s and 30s. And a lot of those had tropical themes. But As I was mentioning to you guys, when I do my tiki class, I talk about a lot of the cultural phenomenon that kind of were like blocks, like a Tetris, game of Tetris, that all kind of fell into place. And suddenly you had this landscape that was perfect for tiki to blossom in the United States. But what I want people to stop and realize is that back in the 30s, when this all started to grow, you couldn't just look on your iPad and you know, get visual ideas of what Tahiti was like or what the Cook Islands were like or Fiji. You maybe, if you were lucky, had a set of Encyclopedia Britannica, and you might have a one-by-one picture of a sandy beach in black and white of Tahiti, And that was all you had. So people in the 1930s were relying on their own imagination and fantasy. And escapism was something that was in between your ears. So, you know, that's what helped shape this. I don't know if Tiki would birth itself today in our environment and with what we have available to us today. Because we are fed so much, we don't use our imagination as much as they did then. With that said, let me talk to you about some of the things that happened culturally that help evolve and create Tiki. And be mindful of the fact, I'll talk about Don Beach and Victor Bergeron. Victor Bergeron in Oakland, California, Don Beach in Beverly Hills, en route from New Orleans and the Caribbean as a rum runner with his grandfather, and then as a merchant. I can't remember if he was a merchant marine or if he was just serving on vessels as staff, but he was in the South Seas on different ships and he was getting a taste of different locations. So you had Victor Bergeron and Don Beach waiting in the wings. This is what was happening that led up to them. Tiki can trace its earliest existence even before Prohibition. There were hurricane themed nightclubs in early 20th century, and that was kind of the start of this whole imagination of Americans putting themselves elsewhere. It wasn't until the 30s or 40s that the most famous cocktails with their island hopping rums and signature flavors of baking spices and almond came to be. It was then too that Tiki became more than just a culture of drinks. The entire atmosphere evolved, transitioning from the ramshackle flotsam and jetsam laden furnishings that was primarily Don Beach to those early stages of more exotic elements like birds, indoor waterfalls, which would later define the spirit of Polynesian pop. And that's a rough quote from Martin Kate, who wrote Smuggler's Cove. I really borrow a lot of what I've learned a lot from Martin Kate. He's very much a historian on what started Tiki. Jeff Berry is also. So those guys really have helped educate me. Prohibition and rum running, you think of Don Beach from the Caribbean to the United States, had a huge influence on Tiki. Oh. Tiki's nothing without the Caribbean cocktails. But there is a huge difference between a Tiki cocktail and a Caribbean cocktail. Let's compare Caribbean cocktails, mojito, painkiller, pina colada, Cuba Libre. What you have are a lot of drinks that are 2-3 ingredients, rum and Coke, dark and stormy. Those are all 2-3 ingredients. And then you get into, and those, a lot of those are adopted and cherished within the Tiki community. But if you look at Tiki drinks and you look at zombies and hurricanes and jet pilots, you're talking 9-10 ingredients. And
complex.
Mm-hmm. Complex. And what you're going for, what Don Beach and Victor Bergeron, as they started, and we were so blessed that they were there together to compete against one another.
Yeah.
Because their competition fueled innovation.
Yeah.
Like having Ford and Chevy. One would not exist without the other.
So, Mark, before you get any deeper, I just want to point this out. A lot of people that aren't really initiated into this scene, they think, oh, Tiki cocktails. That's basically some pineapple juice, some orange juice, something else sweet, and lime. some really bad rum that you're masking the flavor of, and that's your Tiki drink.
Yeah, like at TGI Fridays.
But when you experience things like Don Beach's recipes, there's a lot of spice and herbs and other things in there, too.
There's a whole lot of, because Don Beach himself, thank you for bringing that up. Don Beach himself, when he was rum running with his grandfather, he was on those islands. He was on Barbados and he learned what falernum is. He was in the Caribbean. He learned what orgeat is. And just quickly, orgeat being not almond syrup, but almond milk syrup. And its origins actually go all the way back to the Middle East. Mm. Some people say orge. I say orgeat. It's not a French word. It's actually a word that's rooted in Lebanon. And it's I think that its origin, I may be mistaken. I think the word's origin is Lebanese. So I don't say orge to make it French. I say orgeat.
If you're out there wondering what that is, look for orgeat. Is kind of how it's spelled, right?
O-R-G-E-A-T,
right.
Which is blanched almonds, sugar, and just
delicious.
So intoxicating. The nose is intoxicating. The taste is intoxicating.
Delicious.
So Don Beach was learning about different rums. He was learning about Agricoles from Martinique. He was learning about these funky molasses rums from Jamaica. And he and his grandfather were making dollars, bringing all that back to the United States. So he got to know those different rum distilleries. He got to know those different rums. And he got a rum education that translates into the bedrock of tiki. So quickly, before I go into the four, I was telling you guys, I talk about the four pillars of tiki. I'm going to come back to them, but let me quickly say the four pillars of tiki are Don Beach or Don the Beachcomber, Victor Bergeron, Trader Vic, Henry Yee, who brought tiki, I use that word loosely. He brought tiki to Hawaii. All these Americans were going to Hawaii and they wanted tiki. Well, tiki was here in the States. It wasn't in Hawaii. Henry Yee made it happen in Hawaii at the Royal Hawaiian Hotel. And Stephen Crane, who was an actor in Hollywood, he got out of acting, but he knew all the people at the studios, and he had a successful steakhouse. But then he turned around and opened the Luau in Beverly Hills, which was wildly successful. Mm-hmm. He went to the people he knew at Hollywood in these studios, and they helped him to design this restaurant, Lark. And he's also the first, it's questionable, but he's noted as being the first to bring tikis into these bars and use the idols themselves. So those are the four people that shaped tiki. I've lost my main train of thought that I was going to go back to.
It's interesting that you were pointing this out, that in Hawaii, there really aren't that many tiki bars that are. No, I mean, there's Mariana Sailing Club, and there are a couple other that are popping up right now. The Mina Bird is a good little bar, but it's in a mall, right? So it's kind of funny how all the Hawaiian stuff that we enjoy isn't really that readily available in Hawaii, which is
tiki,
strange.
For people who aren't familiar, tiki is a word that's not. It's really not, doesn't have its origin in Hawaiian culture. The word is actually from Southeast Polynesia. I believe its root is Maorian, which is North New Zealand.
Yeah.
And it is just the word for man. My name's Mark. Mark is derivative of the Roman word Mars. So the names Mark and Mike actually just mean man. They are the word Mars in Roman, in Latin Vulgate, was just the word for man. And so tiki is just the word for the first man. And so Hawaii had to incorporate it into their own culture. And I don't blame them, because tourists were wanting this. And so the people there were able to make money off this and give the tourists what they want, so to speak. Yeah. But given that I lost my train of thought because I'm an old man with no memory, I'll go.
you need a cocktail is what you need.
Well,
I do.
Mark,
I do.
Can I maybe ask you about the big debate? And maybe that's where you were going. I'm not sure. But for our listeners who aren't aware, the Mai Tai is a very, it's like one of the most, I mean, common, well-known tiki drinks. But the big debate is, was it Don or was it Vic?
It was Vic.
It was Vic. Blasphemy. I always believed that, too.
It was Don.
It but was?
I want to here. Here's the thing that people need to realize. Victor Bergeron came from a family that owned grocery stores and restaurants. Don Beach came from the tradition of alcohol. So Don Beach was making the drinks, and you know, his first location, the Rat Pack locked on and they discovered it. The Rat Pack not being the Frank Sinatra, Sammy Davis Jr. Rat Pack, but the original Rat Pack of Humphrey Bogart and his crew of people. Oh. Mm. And they realized that they didn't have to put on their tuxedos to go to the Stork Club or Le Cirque or any of these, you know, the tropics. They could go to Don the Beachcomber, or actually his first place was Don Beachcomber before it became Don the Beachcomber. And they could just wear their dungarees and they could sit around amongst shipping crates and fish floats and drink these incredibly tasty drinks and get smashed.
I say, and potent too.
Yes.
Yeah, potent. Don't be fooled.
Right. And then at the same time, you had this guy up in Oakland who opened Hinky Dinks, and he was creating his own exotic world. And, you know, Victor Bergeron created Crab Rangoon. Hmm. He created shrimp toast. He created a lot of things that later got incorporated into Chinese American restaurants. Yeah. But he was creating his own ideas of exotica. And I have my copy of Trader Vic's book of food and drink. I cherish this. This is later. He opened his restaurant in 1937, I want to say. Let me go to my notes.
To be fair,
you know, I'll get to that. I want to prelude that, if that's the right word, with a few things that happened historically that led up to these two guys opening their restaurants that are significant. And I think you guys will appreciate that. But anyway, Craig, you were going
to
ask me a question.
Oh, to be fair to Dave's question, both Mai Tais are very different. Except for rum, there's not much similarity between the two drinks.
They are both. You're right. And you know, you asked me that two more times, Dave, I'll give you two more answers. when I was a couple of years ago, I was running a seminar at Inuhuele, and I asked that question and I started arguing that Don Beach created it first. And it's funny, the crowd, it depends upon the crowd, but the crowd revolted. They were about to string me up. I've been in other groups where they are banging their fists on the bar saying it's Don Beach. So people have different perspectives, but I believe.
Well, we really cut our teeth at Don the Beachcomber in California. So,
yeah.
So that's, you know, that's kind of our genesis into the whole tiki thing. So
and his original recipe used falernum in his Mai Tai. Isn't that correct?
A lot of spice.
But I think that I raised the point that one was alcohol focused and the other was food focused. They caught wind of what each other was doing, and I think that Victor Bergeron had visited Don Beachcomber and had tried some of the drinks, and I think that he was inspired and he had some mental notes, and I think that from that he created the Mai Tai. But you know, it's a great debate, and it's like I said before, it's a debate that helped push tiki through the century. Without that competition, we would not have tiki.
Yeah.
So I love it that people still debate that. What do you think, Dave? Who do you think created the first Mai Tai?
Yeah, but a better question is, which one is the best Mai Tai, though, right? My husband is all over the Don Beach Mai Tai. That's his.
But it's much more difficult to make than the Trader Vic Mai Tai.
Yeah, we don't get it often.
I like the Trader Vic's.
Me too. I like Trader Vic's.
My personal favorite is the Trader Vic with the Rock Candy Stir
Where do you get
the rock candy stirred?
Oh, you can get them online. They're simple.
I mean, which bar serves it that way?
I have had it that way at Trader Vic's in Atlanta before. I haven't had it that way there recently, but it's fantastic.
And what I love
about that, what's so great about tiki drinks is that their flavor evolves as the ice melts, as the drink sits and lingers.
That
flavor changes. And so if you have a rock candy stir and you're stirring that into the cocktail, that changes the profile of the drink as that melts. So really delicious. And I like using, when I have done that, I like using brown sugar rock candy stirs.
Oh, my goodness. I've never had it that way. I don't think.
So good.
I don't think that sounds fantastic. Cool.
I will make them for you.
All right. We're heading out.
And by the way,
next time you're up here,
for our listeners, we should point out that the original Mai Tai recipe does not call for pineapple juice.
No.
or grenadine. Orange juice. I have been bartending, and I have had patrons sit down at the bar, and we have gotten onto the topic of tiki, and they'll say, "Oh, I don't like tiki, it's all too sweet." And I said, I will say to them, "Let me make you my Mai Tai." And they are surprised that there is a lack of fruit juice in there. I said the only fruit juice in a real Mai Tai is lime juice.
Yep.
Right.
And it is a rum sour. It is a rum sour with the addition of orgeat. Mm-hmm. That's what it is at its base.
Now, okay. Don Beach's Mai Tai calls for Myers Plantation rum, Cuban rum, lime juice, grapefruit juice, Flarnum, Cointreau, Angostura bitters, Pernod. Oof. And lime shell, one cup of cracked ice.
That is a lot of ingredients.
It is a lot of ingredients, but also it's spicy. It's not a sissy sweet drink. Like, you know, when you get off the plane in Hawaii with the special aloha package, they serve you a Mai Tai, quote unquote, which is pineapple juice, orange juice, a little bit of orgeat, and some rum. And that's about it. And you're off and running.
That's not it.
Which is yummy, but that's not a Mai Tai.
Well, yeah, it is good, but right.
I can't do that.
Good for you.
I just can't do it.
Right.
More power to Don Beach and his creativity, because that's true tiki right there. That's very involved.
Yeah, it is. It is. And that's why I make the Trader Vic Mai Tai, even though I like the Don Beach Mai Tai better. But the Trader Vic Mai Tai is just easier.
Yeah.
There are two drinks that one of the things that's helped me in my role as a bartender is I have a very defined sense of smell, and I have a overactive hooter. I am absolutely and often intoxicated by two drinks. I love the smell of an old fashioned. Oh, it gets me every time. I want to make a cologne for men, and I want to call it old fashioned. Mm. I think that I will be a multimillionaire when I finally get that bottled and sold.
Oh, yeah.
The other is a Mai Tai. When you have the lime juice and you have those rums, especially if you have a funky Jamaican rum in that Mai Tai and that orgeat and the mint and that smell, just goes for days. I can't get enough of that. And it just talking about it, it makes me salivate.
My favorite, my favorite cologne or aftershave is bay rum. I almost want to sip it. It just smells so great.
He sprays the dog with it now and again. He sprays it in his hair.
Wouldn't you wear a cologne called Old Fashioned?
Yes, I would.
Yes.
In a heartbeat.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That sounds fantastic.
Those bitters and the orange and the bourbon. Oh, man.
Of course, the cops would definitely give you the test every time they talk to you. But
follow the rules of the road.
Go ahead, David. I'm sorry.
Well, I was going to ask you, Mark, since we have the master on the show with us today, that is the one area I struggle with the most. I have not found an orgeat that I really, really like. So what do you recommend?
Wow. Okay. I recommend the recipe in Smuggler's Cove. I better say that, or Martin Cape may come find me and beat me to a pulp. And you know the story, and I will gladly tell the story.
Yes.
But here's what happened. When Tiki Cat opened, the opening night was crazy, and I had made my way over to the corner, and I was helping Martin Kate wash dry glassware because the place was slammed, and he was over there working. By the way, he helped with the menu, the drink menu there at Tiki Cat. Absolutely phenomenal, and he's one of my heroes. And one of my mentors that I really look up to. And at the time, he had just released Smuggler's Cove book. He and Rebecca Kate, his wife, had just received the James Beard Award for the book. And kudos to them. The book is absolutely fantastic.
It is.
What I love about the book, and this is no offense to Sven. I love Sven. He is such a wealth of knowledge in the tiki world. He's academic, and he can extrapolate for days and days and days. And that's a gift, and he's a treasure. What Martin Kate does so beautifully with Smuggler's Cove is he economizes the history of tiki, and he puts it in such perfect form that you can take reams and reams and reams of the information that Sven gives us, and Martin Kate will put it in two pages.
Now,
and you get what you need. It's just so he and Rebecca, I shouldn't take away, that may be Rebecca's gift, but the two together created a masterpiece with the book Smuggler's Cove, and it's a must-have for anyone and everyone listening.
Some of our listeners are in on the whole tiki thing, some are not. Who are these people that you're talking about, for those who don't know?
Okay. Martin Kate and his wife Rebecca are the owners of a beautiful tiki bar in San Francisco called Smuggler's Cove. And from that, he wrote this book. He also owns other tiki, other bars. He owns a gin bar in San Francisco called White Chapel. Martin, I apologize if I got the name of it wrong. He also co-owns Jalapele up in Portland. And he also co-owns Lost Lake in Chicago with Paul McGee. Martin is just a fantastic purveyor of tiki-dom. and he has created some great drinks. And like I said, he's one of the people that has been a big influence on me. And that kind of stung me in the butt that night at Tiki Cat. We were talking about his book, and we were cleaning the dishes, and he said, "Have you tried any of the recipes in the book?" And I told him that I just had an event and I wanted to use his orgeat recipe, and I was pressed for time, so I did a 5-minute orgeat. And he stopped washing glasses and he looked at me and he said, "You did what?" And I said, I created a orgeat with almond milk and sugar. And he's like, "I can't believe you did that." And he took a few moments to undress me and scold me for taking the easy way out. He said, "Mark, it doesn't have the right mouthfeel. It is not consistent. It's not a good orgeat. And I can't believe you would do something like that in your bar program." And when he finished, there was a couple sitting at the end of the bar, and they were like, "Holy smokes, he just really laid into you." And I was beaming with pride because here's Martin Kate expecting better from me.
Oh,
and I learned from that, awesome. And I will never make the 5-minute orgeat.
Well, so for those of us who can't make a 5-minute orgeat or even the full process, what's an off the shelf version you recommend?
Oh man, off the shelf. Now this is a difficult question to answer because not all these are available in all markets.
Right.
But I love the Giffard.
Oh yeah.
Orgeat, and it is available in some markets. I do like the Jeff Berry's orgeat that you can get through Cocktail Kingdom. I like it. I have taken the Fee Brothers orgeat, and it's not bad, but just know that it's very, very sweet. And so when you use it work down on your orgeat, like if you're used to adding 3/4 of an ounce, trim it back with the Fee Brothers because the flavor can take over a cocktail.
Got it.
But I love using the Giffard because it's milky. You know, going back to what Martin Kay said to me, the Giffard orgeat has fantastic mouthfeel. It's just so well done. Mm. There are some others that aren't in my market here. Down in Texas, people swear by, hang on, I'll think of the brand. But there's a brand there that people love. They can't get the Jaffard in Texas. I got to give a shout out to Blair and BG mm-hmm. Reynolds. Mm-hmm. His Orgeat is really, really good. I like using his Orgeat. So, yeah.
All right, man.
So if you're looking for these, Jaffard looks like Gifford. So I'm just saying the way that you might read the label, if you're looking for something that starts with a J, it starts with a G. So yeah, just for what
and
that's
you
worth.
You can find Jeff Berry's products via Cocktail Kingdom website.
Cocktail Kingdom. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, what would you get if you're just a novice and you're looking to, you know, build your own home bar and you're kind of just getting into the tiki drinks? What would be like the basics? What kind of would you get first for a first timer?
Well, there, when you start to dive into tiki, you see that there is this massive catalog of different recipes.
Right.
So what you have to do is you kind of have to pick your recipes. But I bring people back to the Mai Tai being the signature drink of tiki. So you want to have what I think is a good Jamaican rum and a good Martinique rum. Mm-hmm. You can circumvent that by using – I love plantation rums, and I'm a huge ambassador for plantation, not literally, but I just, my spirit is with them and their products. And I would recommend to people the plantation OFTD.
Okay.
If you want a strong rum for your Mai Tai, cause that's an overproof rum, and that's comparable to Lemon Heart 151, which as we know is a historic rum within the world of tiki recipes. I would also, and I would recommend Lemon Heart 151. That's a good rum to have in your bar.
A
little hard to get for everyone. That's why I went to the plantation. The other one is the Plantation 3 Stars. It's not an agricole rum, but it's a rum that Plantation makes where they cull rums from 3 different islands and 3 different terroirs, Jamaica, Trinidad, and Barbados. And they blend those rums. And it's very much like an agricole. It's not as grassy as an agricole, but it is a good rum. Those two rums, when I was competing in the Iron Tiki Tender in Portland, Oregon, and we were doing our competition Mai Tais, those were the rums I used in my competition Mai Tai. I used Plantation OFTD. Now listen, listeners, if the OFTD is too strong, buy the Plantation Original Dark. And what you're getting is a rum that has a Demerara rum base.
Now, what does Demerara mean?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that. Demerara is an essential flavor in tiki cocktails. Demerara is the name of the river that runs through the country of Guyana. On either side, you have the sugarcane fields, and they make this rum in Guyana that's unique. And I kind of call it a hybrid. It's not a hybrid, but it's kind of like Turbinado sugar, Demerara sugar is. Listeners can't see this, but you see the color. It's a golden brown. It's not a white sugar and it's not a brown sugar. It's kind of in between. That's why I said it's like Turbinado. And the flavor of Demerara sugar is just exceptional. And again, here, my mouth's watering. I talk about one of these flavors I love. So the Original Dark, the OFTD, they have that. They have Demerara rum in their blends. So those, when you make your Mai Tai, you would want to do an ounce and a half of either the OFTD or the Original Dark, and then do an ounce of the Plantation 3 Star, and then, you know, either 3/4 of an ounce up to an ounce of lime juice, depending upon your flavor, your palate. Half an ounce to 3/4 of an ounce of Orgeat, and about 1/4 of an ounce of the Pierre Ferrand dry curacao or a good curacao. That's essential. When you buy these enhancers, you want to make sure that they are well made. You don't want something that just comes off tasting like sugar. If you buy the low-end stuff, it doesn't necessarily have a flavor. It just has sugar. Mm-hmm. So that's my recommendation, Paula, for just like building a simple Mai Tai. And with that, you want to have that good for your bar, and it will translate into other drinks. You want to have that good orange curacao.
Yeah.
And you want those good rums. And, you know, from that basis of those, you can take the OFTD or the original dark, lime juice and ginger beer, and you can make dark and stormies. Mm-hmm. So you can start to branch out. You can take the original dark and you can make a Demerara swizzle cocktail. Mm-hmm. And for people that aren't familiar with tiki cocktails, go onto your if you have an iPhone, I can't remember if it's available on Android yet or not, but Total Tiki is the app that Jeff Beachbumberry has that you can use to access all these drink cocktail, these cocktail recipes. But if you don't have the right phone to get that app, never fear. I want to impress upon people, Google the name of a cocktail and you can, and now listen, pay attention to this because this is I'm going to get on my soapbox. When you do Google the name of a cocktail recipe, you're going to get all these different people that are foodies that make cocktails.
Oh.
And they are going to talk ad nauseum about their trip to Provence or their trip to Jamaica. And then 10 pages down will be a recipe.
Right.
Avoid that.
Yeah.
Avoid that. You want to go to these websites. You want to go to Punch. You want to go to Imbibe, liquor.com. But you'll see, you'll quickly glean which websites, but those are good websites that you can access. If you see one that's Spruce Eats or Tasty Bites, just scroll on. Because if you look up a hurricane, you're going to see all of those. They went to New Orleans for a weekend. They fell in love with hurricanes. And they want to tell you all about the wedding reception that they went to.
Okay.
But not the hurricane.
Right. So, Mark, let me ask you this. You know, my opinion is, to answer Paula's question, if you're just starting out, I would say get about four different kinds of rum,
mm-hmm.
good
mm-hmm.
ones, not you don't have to pay $100 a bottle, but I mean, decent ones. No. Not leave the Bacardi alone unless you're getting the high-end Bacardi. You'll need lemon juice, lime juice, orgeat, flarinum. What else? Help me out. Simple syrup.
The Mai Tai, anything for a Mai Tai, right?
Everything, anything, your orange curacao, get load up on the little bitty cans of pineapple juice. That way you don't have to exhaust a huge can of pineapple juice.
Right. Trader Joe's has some.
Oh, Trader Joe's is awesome.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Your grapefruit juice, pineapple juice are essentials to have. Orange juice is an essential, but it's not as essential as people think.
Okay.
And I've learned from Paul McGee to, like, for example, in a painkiller calls for 4 ounces of pineapple juice, an ounce of coconut, an ounce of orange juice. Well, I've taken the orange juice out of my painkiller and I've replaced it with orange curacao.
Oh.
And the point is, and what Paul was impressing upon me is that orange juice as a juice, it's just hard. It separates. There's something in the consistency of it that the molecules are heavy and they pull apart and you get that water on the top and the pulp on the bottom.
Mm.
So orange juice is just a hard one to use and to keep fresh.
Yeah.
But still, you can use it in different things. So use that orange curacao. Mm. The other thing that I tell people when I do my cocktail classes and when I do my cocktail sessions online, I will post a recipe. And what I tell people is that recipe is your blueprint. This is how I make it. You take these measurements and you readjust them for your own palate. You might not want 3/4 of an ounce of orgeat in your Mai Tai. You may want it not as sweet as I like mine sometimes. So yeah. You know, take those recipes and then variate. Another popular tiki cocktail, the Jungle Bird. It uses pineapple juice. I just introduced someone to using passion fruit juice instead of pineapple juice in a Jungle Bird. And instead of using Campari, which is really far on the bitter end of Amaro's, I use Aperol. So feel, learn to make the cocktails and follow those recipes, but also feel free to variate and create that cocktail as you like it. Honey is another essential. Learn to make a good Navy grog. But also bitters. Get the Elamaculi tiki bitters from Bitterman's. Get your Angostura bitters. Get a lot of them. Get your Regan's orange bitters and get a lot of them. You will use those orange bitters.
And they keep for quite a while.
Oh, yeah. They keep. You will use them. But you want those bitters. You also want to get almond extract and vanilla extract and cinnamon. And learn to make your cinnamon simple syrup. And learn to make complex rock candy syrup. Learn to make different syrups, pineapple simple syrup or whatever it is. In a cocktail competition, we had to do tiki cocktails, but we could only do 5 ingredients. So that's when I started doing morphs. I made a cinnamon pineapple chipotle simple syrup.
Whoa.
Oh. Wow.
That's cheating.
Is that not cheating? No. It's that's one awesome. Syrup. It's one syrup, many flavors. Yeah. So it's an ingredient.
to answer that question is tough, and I have consulted people on bars and you know, they're like, what should I get? It boils down to picking some recipes and moving in that direction.
Right.
But
I'm like you. When I go into a bar, I always order their Mai Tai first, and that kind of that tells me, you know, what they're all about. If it's a garbage Mai Tai, it's time to leave.
Craig, with those ingredients that I mentioned, if you buy that Plantation 3-star and you have fresh lime juice, and you don't have to make it this way, but go on to the Pink House, www.pinkhousealchemy.com website, and buy a bottle of the cardamom simple syrup. You can make daiquiris all day long. You don't need the cardamom. All you need is the rum and the lime juice. And I always add that dash of the Pierre Ferrand dry curacao. That dry curacao, that orange curacao, brightens drinks in a beautiful way. But it's dry. It doesn't sweeten the drink, and it doesn't move the drink from here to cloyingly sweet. You know, it's a beautiful product, and you can use that in so many ways.
We're running out of memory card here.
I saw the panic look on my husband's face. Yeah,
I thought it had stopped, but it's just telling me that we're almost out of space. Let's just wrap this up real quick. You had started down the history road. You talk about Trader Vic. You talked about Don Beach. The other two guys, give us a quick synopsis on them, and then hopefully we have enough time left on the card. We'll see.
Let me quickly run through some things and lead into that. Here are some historical events that are notable that helped create that environment for these guys. The 1939 World's Fair Golden Gate International Exposition, with its theme of Pageant of the Pacific in San Francisco. You got to believe that had a huge influence on the San Francisco tiki scene, not just Victor Bergeron, but Tiki Sam's. Trader Sam's opened up right on the back door of that. The World War II, of course, in the Pacific Theater. Thor Heyerdahl's Kon-Tiki expedition across the Pacific Ocean in 1947. It generated a best-selling book, translated into English in 1950. And the Academy Award-winning documentary in 1951. Kon-Tiki. 1948, yep. Tales of the South, a Pulitzer Prize-winning collection of short stories by James Michener. Yes. 1949, South Pacific, the Pulitzer Prize-winning musical by Rodgers and Hammerstein, borrowed from Tales of the South, which brought to stage and screen the exotic, faraway, romantic ideas of island life and created Bally High. The post-war affluence and growth of the middle class who were able to travel, and specifically to Hawaii, which then became a state in 1959. So those are a lot of the cultural elements that promoted this whole phenomenon. So at that time, you had Don Beach, as I said, that opened Don Beachcombers in Beverly Hills after he had been in the Caribbean and been in South Pacific. And then you had Victor Jules Bergeron, who opened Hinky Dinks, and then Trader Vic's. He opened Trader Vic's in 1937. And then you have Stephen Crane, who opened the Luau. He opened the Luau in 1950. He was married to Lana Turner, by the way. Mm. But Stephen Crane also merchandised his mugs, and he created a whole merchandising campaign. He has a separate business called Stephen Crane Enterprises that made the mugs for his places. And then from the Luau in Beverly Hills, he started doing these different locations across the country. Trader Vic got to know Conrad Hilton, was a fan of Trader Vic's, and he started putting those in the Hiltons. Oh. And Don Beach had a relationship with Marriott, and he started putting Don the Beachcomber with Marriott's and across Marriott. The country. Oh. And then the fourth one that people forget is Henry Yee. God bless him. A lovable guy in Hawaii. And so Tiki was growing stateside, and people were going to Hawaii, and they wanted Tiki. And so Henry Yee gave them the exotic that they wanted, and he created the Tropical Itch cocktail, which used the back scratcher. He was the first to incorporate flowers. He's the guy that gave us the tiki garnish. Mm. He started using the flowers. He started using the umbrellas. He did the Blue Hawaiian using the Blue Curacao, Bowl's Blue Curacao. He created created the banana daiquiri. That's debatable because the banana daiquiri was big in the Caribbean, but he made it popular. He was also a guest on Hawaiian Eye. He created this whole phenomenon of dressing up tiki. So those four guys made it all happen. And thanks to them, we have what is today tiki.
Wow, that was good in a nutshell. Yeah. That was awesome. I learned a lot.
Yeah. And if you want to know more about Don Beach, yes. There's a great book called Scrounging the Islands with the Legendary Don the Beachcomber, written by Arnold Bittner. I recommend this one. And I recommend getting a copy of Trader Vic's Guide to Food and Drink that was created in 1948.
Yes.
Let me add one more in my hand here. Hawaii Tropical Rum Drinks and Cuisine by Don the Beachcomber. Oh, another beautiful one by Don Beach. Hey, we're out of memory and out of time. Mark, we're going to have you on again because yes, we just barely scratched the surface. But there are other tiki podcasts out there, so check those out too. We're not a tiki podcast, but we do love tiki. Anyway, until next time, stay swell, everyone.
I just need drinks.